Following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. This is our second episode of our What Have You Been Watching series, just because, you know, crush a Game of Thrones. Our episodes are too action-packed to throw in a discursive discussion of what we have and have not been watching. I'm joined here tonight with Brian Hartman.
That's me.
Bobby Schmidt.
Hello.
And Sean Riley.
Me again.
And I'm John Kissel. So, what have you guys been watching? Bobby, we'll start with you.
I've been watching Wentworth. I just finished the fifth season, which is the last one until a new one starts, but that's all that was on Netflix.
Never heard of that.
It is the Australian version of Women's Prison. And so I guess in the same vein as Orange is the New Black, but it seems far less over the top and a little more believable. There's plenty of frustrating parts and writing within it, but actually I've come to enjoy it more than Orange is the New Black, I think.
Does it have like the summer campy tone of Orange is the New Black?
No, maybe that's why I like it a little better. I mean, I don't know. It just seems a little more believable, and it's not.
I love Orange is the New Black, but if I had to excise a part out of that show, it would be that. Just that they all seem to be having a reasonably good time.
Right. Well,
It doesn't have to be like misery nonstop or anything, certainly. But
no, there's some of that in Wentworth too, of course. And they all have their little cliques and sections where, you know, they have their fun times with. But I think there's a lot more misery and pain in there than there is Orange is the New Black, at least. And I'd recommend it for sure.
It's on Netflix.
Are both of you guys caught up on Orange is the New Black?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't watched this season, but otherwise I've seen.
Yeah, I'm caught
coming up to it.
Again, huge fan in general. And this most recent season was not up to the standard. I thought it was subpar compared to the other four.
All right, our unofficial timekeeper says on to our next one.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
I watched the first half of Nymphomaniac, part one. That's a weird movie. And I feel like
I think everyone knows that, right? Without even watching.
It's not weird in this. Well, like what do you mean by that? Like what do you think most people interpret that movie as?
I don't know. Perversely, anyone thinks it was pornographic, but I think it was just, from what I remember seeing or reading about it, is that it was very, I don't know, over the top about it.
Yeah, it's that, and it's also like an anti-story in a way. Like it knows the tricks of these kind of things. Like the way it's set up is that a woman who is at a very low point in her life is telling her life story to the guy that found her bruised and bloodied on the ground. And a more conventional movie would just tie in, make a lot of easy connections between her childhood and how she lives now. And Nymphomaniac does that, but then it comments on it at the same time. And it also has the most absurd, ridiculous segue, worse than our segues in Game of Thrones by a wide margin. Like the guy she's telling her story to will hear about teenage main character played by Charlotte Gainsbourg in the present, the guy played by Stellan Skarsgård. She'll tell him about how when she was a teenager, she got in a contest with a friend about who could have sex with the most men on a train. And then that will remind him of fly fishing for some reason. It's nonsensical, but holy, it looks really great. And like Shia LaBeouf has probably never been more repulsive in anything, which is really saying something. Riley, you've seen that movie, right?
Yes, I've seen both of them. And okay. that's Lars von Trier is the infamous filmmaker behind that.
That's an apt description of him.
I would say that, at least to him, is probably his masterpiece in his mind, given that it is probably the most out there and absurd movie that he's put out so far.
It was expiring from Netflix when I started watching it, and I couldn't get the second half done in time before it expired. So I still have that to eventually get caught up on. But I want to see how it resolves itself, if it even does that.
I don't know if I would say it resolves itself, but it continues to be odd.
Okay. I wouldn't recommend it if you're not to anyone but like hardcore cinephiles.
Right. So far we're at Bobby, who watches super deep TV, and John, who watches deep movies.
We all watch super deep TV in our own
ways.
Yeah,
I think so.
Brian, what have you been watching?
I've been watching a ton of Rick and Morty.
So that's super deep TV, yeah, in its own way. You got Mr. Poopy Butthole, and you've got universes upon universes.
That's the part I love, is the universes upon universes. Every time he gets into string theory, I'm in.
I just watched the first episode of this yesterday, so I'm in the very beginning of that journey.
So, like, for where do you watch Rick and Morty at? Like, if you want to catch up,
Hulu has it. That's how I started.
That's episodes what I'm watching. Are immediately on YouTube, also, but only for like a week or so before Cartoon Network. I take that back. I don't think they go away. I don't think the creators of Rick and Morty and or Adult Swim give a shit.
That's how I think I watched. I don't know, a couple when it first started. I watched the first 5 episodes on YouTube, and it didn't really seem like anyone cared that they were up. And easy to find.
I watched the new episode that aired last night, the same night, on YouTube. With no commercials. It was, still good. But Brian, continue.
That's it. Well, that's my first one.
That's it. Anything watch else Rick to say about Rick and Morty?
It's like, what's that show that everyone loves that's terrible about math? Big Bang Theory. That's terrible. It's like you take Big Bang Theory and The Simpsons and who knows what else and put it all together and actually make Big Bang Theory good. It's just so weird. I'm really into like weird and magic right now. So
I don't know if Rick and Morty is like super concerned with scientific accuracy, but moment to moment, probably not. But like the grand picture of the series where there are infinite universes and infinite versions of yourself, it leans as far into that as is possible for a show and still remaining funny, because that's it's such a dark proposition, and the show is able to communicate that level of cosmology but also be extremely funny moment to moment.
Right, the episode where all the women are in charge, and instead of saying hello to each other, they just say, "Hi, I'm here to talk if you need it," just over and over. That's just great.
Sure. Writing. Rocketing male babies out into the wasteland.
All right, Riley, on to our next one.
I have watched 4 episodes so far of Ozark on Netflix, the story of Jason Bateman, the... what is he? Is a money launderer, essentially, for a cartel. And he's trying to do it with hanging out with hillbillies in the Lake of the Ozarks. I've seen people try to compare it to Breaking Bad, and we had a discussion on Facebook about it recently. It's not Breaking Bad. It's not really, I don't think it's trying to be, but it is kind of a dark, you know, white-collar guy becomes criminal-ish thing. It's pretty interesting. The performances are good.
I haven't seen a second of this show. I've seen the trailer alone, but I am skeptical of it.
The only thing I've really seen talked about it is Joe and Tom had conversations in our
group. They
loved it. They
full
loved
in.
It.
They're all in. Right. They love it.
I put it on my list, and it's going to be next, but.
The critic, one of the critics who does the Fresh Air podcast, said it was worth watching. It's on my list. I don't know if I'll ever get to it, but it's there.
It seems like an algorithm show that Netflix has just figured out that a lot of people watch Breaking Bad, and they should have one that they specifically own. Maybe I'm being too cynical about it.
I think you're being cynical, but you know, I'm a big fan of Jason Bateman anyway. He's a really good blend in this, and his normal kind of... sarcastic humor mixed with kind of with a little bit darker side than he normally would have.
Is it funny at all?
He has some one-liners. It's not like it's supposed to be funny in terms of making you laugh, but he'll have some one-liners about where he'll point out absurdities and things.
If it was a different actor, do you think those laughs would still be present?
Maybe not. I don't know. Okay. I think it really feels like Jason Bateman.
I've read that he's really good in it. Yeah. So, something to look forward to.
And I like, I can't think of this, the woman's name, the wife. Laura Linney. I like her. Laura Linney. She's a good actress too.
Yeah.
Does Jason Bateman have a brother named Job or spelled something and pronounced funny?
Bobby, what else you got? What else have you been watching?
I've watched the first two or three episodes of The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, boy.
Which I know we've talked about a couple times, but I just finally started it. But, yeah, I think Rage Headaches is accurate.
Yeah, it's bleak.
It is. It's very bleak. It's very good so far, so I'm in on it. But, yeah, it's not one of those you can binge. Like, I'm not going to finish it in 2 days.
No, it took me – the way I watched it, it may as well have aired week to week because that's more or less how long I took between episodes.
Yeah, I could probably do one a day or every other day. You know, that's about what I'll end up doing probably.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably going to win the Emmy just as far as political relevance.
Right.
Like the Emmy voters will want to put their nickel down. And it'll be – I feel like it'll be deserved. Like Game of Thrones is ineligible, and that's a lock as long as it is eligible, I feel like, just based on all the lobbying that HBO does. But
right.
In the meantime, yeah, I'm rooting.
Is that one on Hulu as well?
It is. It's a Hulu original.
Hulu's worth it these days. It's like $12 a month if you pay for the no commercials version. This episode of the Media Community Club brought to you by Hulu. They do good work. I also watched Dunkirk on a 70mm IMAX screen. As far as that being worth it, I can't really speak to it. I'm just not like a technical cinematic person. As many movies as I do watch, like it's more about the story in general.
I have to cut you off on this one because I'm going to go see it tomorrow, and my no spoilers rule.
It's a movie about history.
I haven't taken a history class since high school, so
and Joe's so, not here, so we're fine.
Joe's not here.
Yeah. It is very good without getting into the specifics of a historical event. I don't even want to say what sides, I guess, are happening.
I appreciate your concern for my well-being right now, John.
Yeah, you're welcome. My pleasure.
We'll talk more about it on the next one.
As far as Christopher Nolan movies go, it's probably my favorite of his. It's one of the few Christopher Nolan movies that like has genuine emotion in it. I think if there's a knock against him, it's that he's often cold and obsessed with the things that don't work as well for me in movies, like his recommendation to see Dunkirk on a 70mm IMAX screen, which I took his advice. It's a $21 ticket. I don't regret it necessarily, but I don't know that I'm going to go do that again for the next time something is playing on one of those screens. But that's here and there. The movie itself is excellent. One of the better movies of the year I've seen so far. And what, frankly, hasn't been a fantastic year for movies. Brian, what else you got?
I watched Jackie.
Yeah.
The one with Natalie Portman.
You surprised by the history in that movie?
No, I knew that one. Thank you, John.
You're welcome. So just establishing a baseline.
I was surprised. Well, first of all, I was distracted by her voice, but I don't know what Jackie Kennedy actually sounded like. So it could have been spot on, but it was very distracting to me. And I didn't think they would show some of the brutality and gore of getting shot in the head like they did.
They go for it.
Yeah, but they went. Yeah, they told a good story. I actually got on Wikipedia and was looking up the accuracy of it. And it was just like a blend of different stories, so it wasn't really like the guy who's there interviewing her was an actual, I don't know, person. It was sort of a blend of people.
Someone starts talking about the JFK assassination, I always start to think about the Seinfeld episode.
And, that is one magic loogie.
Right. Back and to the left.
I love Jackie. I thought that movie was great. Just as far as like writing the first draft of history and how that works. Like who gets to tell the story that they want to be told and just how successful you can be if you're on the ball like Jackie in the movie is. I feel like it it's not based in any way on like actual history, like the actual Jackie Kennedy herself. But I don't really give a shit. Like, I put it in the same box as like The Social Network. Like, this is not how history actually happened, but it could have happened this way, and the broader point is more important than the specifics. That was definitely one of my favorite movies last year.
Yeah, in terms of like cinematics, they blended actual footage in with new footage in a non-distracting way, which is pretty hard to do. So I appreciated that. It's worth watching.
Yeah. Riley, anything else?
Well, I have a question. Brian, have you seen Arrival?
Yep. Spoil away.
Okay.
Bobby?
Bobby, I assume you have.
I haven't, but spoil anyway. I don't
care. Okay. I watched that. I had difficulty yesterday logging in to Game of Thrones to be able to watch it at my normal hour. So I had to wait longer and longer to watch. So I watched Arrival first. Everyone had given nothing but glowing reviews about this movie. And nobody has ever mentioned the huge hand wave that you just have to believe that somehow we came up with this perfect understanding and now time travel is possible because we can speak their language.
That doesn't make any sense to me either.
Yeah, that was such a problem that it made me not like the movie. Yeah, it was a good like movie otherwise, but I had a problem.
The idea that like time travel is a sense of perception and not an actual like bending of physical rules. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Still doesn't. It's just something you have to buy in the movie. And if you do, it's really powerful. Like one of the podcasts I listened to was talking about Arrival, and the guy was, he's like got a newborn baby, and that's a big part of the movie is parenting. And like, he could barely get through his review. He was so moved by the movie. And like, I appreciated that movie on a technical level, but I did not have anywhere near that level of reaction to it.
So when you're getting into time travel, though, can't you as a movie director just like make up that it works however you want?
Well, I did appreciate the whole, you know, what do we want time travel? When do we want it? It's irrelevant aspect of it that, you know, once she realized that she could time travel, she knew everything all of a sudden. But yeah, the whole thing, like, I don't know how much time passed while they were trying to learn this language that was obviously complex and foreign. It was hard to get over for me.
I liked it. I wanted more confusion in the conversation between aliens and humans, and I wanted more humans and more aliens and less military. Like, I thought the military aspect was kind of just.
I would agree. I agree.
Meh.
And that was my favorite part of the movie, was them like trying to figure out how to speak with them, because that's like something that happens or happened on this planet. Like, Europeans meet Caribbean islanders for the first time. You got to figure out how to communicate with each other, and they're like, that's extremely interesting.
Yes.
But eventually, just the movie transfers into being about time travel, or incorporates that element, and it's just not as successful. Yeah, I agree. I think Phil gave that movie an A.
He gave it the best movie of the year.
That sounds like a Phil thing to do.
Phil gives everything an A.
I mean, he's in good company. A lot of people, a lot of critics love it. Bobby?
What?
Anything else?
You're up.
Oh, no.
Do you not know how this works yet?
Yeah, we just go until we're out.
Oh, no, I got nothing else. Are we doing like what we're going to watch soon or what we look forward to or anything?
That's
or
for the next one.
Oh, no, I got nothing left.
Brian. I had nothing except for what I was going to watch.
I watched Swiss Army Man.
Ooh, Barney Bona Corpse.
Because it was on the shelf at the library. It was. It's worth watching if you like really weird movies. But I can't say I was overly impressed when I was finished. Like, by the end, I just kind of wanted things to be done.
I think it's the best thing Daniel Radcliffe has ever done.
I don't know what else he's done.
Did you tell me about
Harry Potter?
Harry Potter, there you go. I like the Harry Potter movies more.
I mean, without getting into Harry Potter movies and how I feel about those, like the movie itself, was fine. Like I gave it a B minus, but like
he should have been
nominated for an Oscar. It was just an incredible physical performance.
Yeah, so I didn't know when I started watching it, because I don't have any clue about anything I'm watching. I didn't realize he was going to come back to life, and so they're showing Daniel Radcliffe as a dead body, and I thought, is he really just going to act like a dead body for the next 2 hours of this movie? And so, yeah, he did a great job.
You told me that I would really like this one, Brian? Someone did.
I think you would.
Yeah, I believe it's on Amazon Prime. I would.
All right, I'll add it to the list.
I think it is on Prime. I was really excited about it when I read the phrase "farty boner corpse."
Sure.
I turned it on one night. I didn't make it very long into it because I think, like Brian was saying, it's very weird. Yes. And I wasn't in the right frame of mind to sit and actually watch that movie.
I put away some laundry while I watched it, and that helped.
Yeah. I mean, hands down, it is deeply weird. Like, the score incorporates like plot descriptions of what's happening on the screen. It's an odd movie, but it's worth watching, though.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the key. You got to watch it.
Have you got anything else, Brian?
Of course.
Well, I'll do one.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I watched a movie called Edge of Winter with Joel Kinnaman. He was the new version of RoboCop. And Tom Holland, who just played Spider-Man. So Joel Kinnaman plays like a deadbeat dad. Not deadbeat dad, but like a down-on-his-luck guy whose kids are moving away from him. They're a little more cosmopolitan, connected to the world, smartphones, all that stuff. And he's like an unemployed blue-collar guy. He has a weekend with his kids, and he's like trying to impress them with like outdoorsy stuff, guns, hunting, hiking, that kind of thing, and things progress from there. I don't want to get into what actually happens because, like one of the better parts of it was just knowing that something was going to happen. And all right, now they're doing target practice. This could potentially go badly, and now the weather's getting colder, and so on and so forth. It does kind of fall apart a little bit in the third act, but leading up to it, like Kinnaman and Holland, and there's a younger brother too, who I thought was also great for like being a kid actor. It was a really tense movie, and Kinnaman was excellent. It's just like he's not as hard as you expect that kind of blue collar person to be. Like he's allowed to be vulnerable in the movie, which just added another layer. And yeah, solid, good, not great. Brian,
I forgot I've already mentioned the other one. Rev, we're still plugging through that one.
You have mentioned Rev.
I know. We're still going through that.
Okay. So I've got two more movies then.
Yep.
Real quick. I watched 2 Days, One Night, which is a French movie starring Marion Cotillard, who was in The Dark Knight Rises. And I can't think of another American thing. She was in Allied with Brad Pitt from last year. Primarily a European actress, though, a French actress. She's mostly in French things. And she does her best work there. And she does... Like the same rule applies in 2 Days, One Night. It's by these Belgian directors, the Dardenne brothers, who make these like small morality plays. The situation here is Marion Cotillard has recently been laid off from her job. But she was laid off because she works for a small like industrial company, and they made a collective decision whether or not to fire her or allow themselves to keep all their bonuses. But the initial decision is tainted because the foreman was like spreading untrue rumors that if they didn't vote to get rid of her, not only would they lose their bonuses, but more of them would lose their jobs. And that's just not the case. So Marion Cotillard's character has a weekend to try and rally people to forego their bonuses and vote to let her stay. That's just the movie. That's what the movie is. She's going around to like these 16 different coworkers and trying to convince them to let her stay at the company. And if that sounds repetitive, that's a justifiable expectation, but in no way is it repetitive. Like each interaction is subtly different, and each new character, each new coworker brings something slightly different to the dynamic. And like, because she's the main character, your sympathies are completely with her. And then just as you hear more and more people that are working in a good job, but not a job that is solving all their problems, like paying all of their bills, these people need this bonus, and she's trying to convince them to forego it. And it's just really complicated and morally dense. And I absolutely loved it. And then last movie, less positive, is a movie called Free Fire, starring Brie Larson and Armie Hammer from The Social Network, and Charlton Copley from District 9. It's like it's just this gun deal gone wrong, and these people are stuck in a warehouse, and they're shooting it out. Like, things go badly, and that sounds like a totally fine 90-minute movie, which is what this is, but the director, Ben Wheatley, never makes you give a shit about any of these characters, and it just becomes an interminable trading of gunshots, and it sucks. I did not like that movie at all.
Okay, because when you started talking about it and said Brie Larson and Armie Hammer, I was trying to figure out why I'd never heard of it, because those two were, like, super hot actors and actresses right now.
It was a total flop. And justifiably so, because it is boring and pointless. It cost $7 million and made half that. So that's pretty shitty.
And how'd you stumble upon this one?
Because the director, Ben Wheatley, made a horror movie that I admire called Kill List, and he made a movie last year called High Rise with Tom Hiddleston and Jeremy Irons, and a pretty deep cast that I also didn't like. It didn't make any, like, chronological sense as far as what was happening. Like, High Rise is about, it's like the shorthand is, it was Snowpiercer, but vertical. Like, there's a high rise building, and the rich people on the top and the poor people are on the bottom, and they go to war with each other, more or less. Okay. But it looked great. It had pretty crazy imagery in it, just as these things start to decay. Like, the opening scene is Tom Hiddleston on the roof of this high rise eating a dog, like roasting a dog on a spit. And then it flashes back in time before he was eating dogs. So I wanted to give this movie a chance, but I think I'm done with Ben Wheatley now. Like, he's not impressed me two movies in a row. So I think that's it.
So you saying you saying Brie Larson made me think of Alison Brie and reminded me, I did just finish Glow recently. So I did watch that. I don't know if any of you watched it yet.
I did. And I really liked it. I really enjoyed that movie.
It was fantastic. That series. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, just wrestling works. I don't think I've ever seen a bad wrestling movie or TV show or whatever. Like, even documentaries.
Have you seen Ready to Rumble?
No.
with David Arquette?
No, but I think that's what'll turn me on the genre.
No Holds Barred was pretty not good.
Was
You Bite Your
Tongue?
Documentary,
right?
What?
Is that a documentary?
No,
that's the one with Hulk Hogan. And Tiny Lister.
Is that about wrestling, or is he just like a guy that exists in the world in that movie?
Oh, no, Hulk Hogan is basically Hulk Hogan. His character is not named Hulk Hogan.
All right, so maybe I am completely wrong about that assertion and don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
It was from
but
the
like
80s,
Beyond
though.
The Mat, the wrestler.
Maybe that's the movie from the 80s that changes your mind.
Maybe it's like Room quality where I'm just it's like so bad it's great. Totally possible. Anything else?
Well, you mentioned The Room. I don't know how I feel about the two 10-year-olds who independently came up to me this weekend and said, "Oh, hi, Mark."
And they knew what they were referencing.
They knew what they were referencing, and they said they've seen clips of it on YouTube.
I'm fine with it.
Of course you are.
I'm totally fine with it.
Brian, you're a parent. What do you think?
I don't remember enough about that movie to know. Was there anything inappropriate?
Oh, yes. Lots of it. There was, setting aside just the shot composition and the basic dialogue, there's a lot of, speaking of wrestlers, there's like the ass of a 50-year-old steroid-abusing wrestler in it, or at least what presumably that would look like.
That's not bad. It's violence.
That's not bad.
It's just
I mean,
butt.
He does shoot himself at the very end. Spoilers for The Room.
Yeah, we can't. Well,
and they did use the same sex scene in two different times because they only wanted to film one sex scene.
That makes sense. So, like, you could just fast forward to the second one. Like, your kids would get the gist after having seen the first one.
The redeeming thing for the kids Riley's talking about is they just pick this stuff up on YouTube. It's not like they have any idea of the other hour and 20 minutes that's going on.
Yeah, like the flower shop scene is universal.
Right. That's all they know. I guarantee it. Oh, I got another one. I got one more.
Okay, yeah, this will be the last one.
My sister sent us Happy Feet.
Ooh.
Because she had an extra copy. That is awful. Both
I watched that.
A kid level and an adult level, it has almost no redeeming qualities. Like, kids, like, love to sing and dance. They'll watch Singing in the Rain and I don't know what's the one. God, my memory's so bad. With The Sound of Music. They'll watch The Sound of Music on repeat. They didn't make it 15 minutes into Happy Feet before they quit.
That movie good made a them. Shit ton of movie or money, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think they saw through Robin Williams' coke fueled performance, and couldn't get any past it.
Oh God, that was so bad.
From the director of Mad Max: Fury Road, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm just gonna throw that thing in the trash.
Good for you.
Plus,
I watched that on the plane.
It was full screen version instead of widescreen. We can't have that around here.
Oh, that's a shame. All right. So that'll do us for this episode of What Have You Been Watching? And we will return in the future for more. So thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
It's been a pleasure.
Have a good night.